Happy Hours, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media. Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Welcome to Happy Hours, exclusive podcast by NHRDN. I'm Nikita Doshi, part of NHRD Bangalore Executive Committee and work in the learning team at Publicis Sapient. And I will be your host for today's podcast. I'm very honored, privileged, and excited to have Marc Efron as our guest for today's podcast. Marc Efron is the talent management guru, one of the few people I look upon and admire. He is the president of Talent Strategy Group. Marc has co-authored bestsellers, One Page Talent Management, often called the Talent Management Bible, and 8 Steps to High Performance. Marc founded and publishes Talent Q magazine. He has been working for clients in India since 2001. Something you may not know about him is that he is trained in Muay Thai boxing, which sounds really exciting to me. Welcome to Happy Hours, Marc.
Thank you, Nikita. It is very exciting to be here, and I look forward to our conversation.
So, Marc, we have 2 sections in Happy Hours. The first one called Bottoms Up, where today we will discuss about unpacking high potential strategy, a topic you are very passionate about. And the second section is called the Rapid Fire, where we will ask you some questions and you will need to respond to it real quick. So are you ready for the first section, Bottoms Up?
Let's go.
Bottoms Up.
Bottoms Up.
Marc, one of the challenges I have seen with organizations is that they don't have a consistent definition of potential, and it is often interchangeably used with performance. Personally, I have seen so many models of defining potential, but many are dated and not relevant in today's time. According to you, how should organizations define and identify high potential talent in a very simple and a scientific manner?
Well, you bring up one of the key unanswered questions in the HR field, which is how do we accurately predict potential? Here's the challenge, and then I'll tell you my thoughts. The challenge is, even though many very smart scientists have done lots of research on this topic, we still don't know that much about what predicts potential. What do we know? We know that intelligence is still the largest single predictor of both performance and potential, but it only explains about a third of how successful we are. We know that personality factors, not nice personality, but some of the psychological factors, conscientiousness, extroversion, help to predict potential. But after that, we don't know. And those two things only predict maybe 50, 55% of our effectiveness. What I think organizations need to do is think through both those two factors and intelligence. Most people who enter the working world are intelligent enough to get the job done. It's not that much of a screen. Personality factors actually can be a big screen. So I think it's helpful to look at, do people have those helpful personality factors? But more importantly, something that many of your listeners probably do every year, conducting great talent reviews and having very clear criteria for what will allow someone to succeed at our organization going forward. You're already likely talking about very intelligent people in that talent review. That conversation to predict potential should focus on what are the 3 or 4 big behaviors or big capabilities that we need people to demonstrate going forward in our company? And how closely does Rajan or Shruti fit against that model? Because it's likely that that conversation is going to be the best predictor of potential within your specific organization.
Great. And I agree with you, Marc. It is a challenge. And if I just may ask you a follow-up question to that, is there a recommended percentage of people that you recommend should be categorized as high potentials?
Well, I normally start with a saying, the top 10% is the top 10%. So it suggests that if you have 35% of people you have identified as high potential, you're probably being too generous. I think as a rough rule of thumb, 10% of all leaders is reasonable, with that number getting smaller the higher up you go in the organization. because let's say you have a managing director and her or his team members, unless those team members can become the managing director, they're not high potential. They're just high performers. So the higher up we go in the organization, the smaller that percent should get.
Thanks for that guidance, Mark. Very helpful, simple, and clear. So once we identify high potential, the next step we get into is differentiation. What sort of differentiation should be created by companies for high potential? I'm a very big fan of your talent investment grid in your one-page talent management book, which talks about how do you differentiate talent. So can you share some ideas on how companies can implement this in a very simple manner?
Absolutely, Nikita. I think the starting point is, what is your company's talent philosophy around differentiation? Meaning, there's no one right way to say how much you want to give to a high performer versus a high potential, or a high potential versus average potential. There's no right answer, but your company should have a consistent answer that you consistently apply to all of your leaders. To get to that answer, you need to go to the executive team and say, what do you think is the best way to manage talent given our strategy? People can go to my website, read our article, What's Your Talent Philosophy, to get more information around that. But once you decide on that philosophy, let's say you believe in a lot of differentiation. Sometimes it can be as simple to apply as using the tool you've just talked about, the Talent Investment Grid. Again, go to the website, you'll find some information on that. Talent Investment Grid simply says, let's take all of what I call the goodies that a company can give you. That might be money, it might be experiences, exposure, education, lots of things that a company can give you, but all those are also finite items. We only have so much money, we only have so much of the executive times, etc. So how do we want to divide those finite things across those groups? I like starting with that 9-box grid and just saying, for the managing director's or CEO's time, how much of that should go to interacting with hypos, high performers, average performers? For our biggest, juiciest, most engaging experiences, who should get those? So having a structure around that can be very helpful, not only so we understand as HR leaders, but so that the people in our company see a consistent application of that. Because let's say that, Nikita, both you and I are high potentials. You get big projects, a little something extra in your pay package, and you're clearly told you're a high potential. People say Mark's a high potential as well, but I don't get any of those things. Maybe one day you and I have a cup of coffee and we talk about our respective experiences as high potentials at our company. I'm going to be very unhappy because I would have just found out we're both considered high potential, but you get a bunch of great things that I don't get. So consistency here is the key. Make sure there's a consistent set of practices around how much we want to invest in people based on differing performance and potential.
Yeah, I agree. Consistency is key. And one of the key differentiators you spoke about was exposure, education. In your mind, when people are, curating these top talent or high potential development programs, what are the important factors to ensure that the program is successful? And how do we know that it's successful? How should companies measure effectiveness of the high potential development program?
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, in terms of constructing them, let's go back to the rule that we all know of 70-20-10 and ask ourselves, when we think about our high-pro development program, are we applying 70-20-10 mentality? In other words, is most of what we're doing for those high-pos around the experiences we're giving them? In a lot of organizations, it's not. In a lot of organizations, they develop a very flashy and expensive HIPO program. HIPOs feel good about it. HR feels good about it. Executive team feels good about it. But we know that's not what allows people to grow quickly. So I think the starting point for designing a great HIPO program is starting by saying, do we understand the right experiences to move each of these HIPOs into or through to best accelerate their development? And then we can round that out with a great class or some great feedback or coaching. Those are very helpful. But are we using experiences as the primary lever of development in that HIPO program? In terms of measuring success, obviously that's a little bit tricky. The ultimate measure is this person developing faster because of the program that we gave them versus if we didn't give them that program at all? Because that's really the essence of what you're trying to figure figure out is, did this program matter at all? And there's no great quantitative way to evaluate that. I think the best way you can evaluate that is by simply asking executive team members or senior leaders who interact with each of these individuals if they have seen a meaningful difference in their skill set or their behaviors or whatever the variable is that you're interested in over the course of the program or up to shortly after that.
I think, Mark, this is a really tough one to crack, and most companies are on this journey to figure it out. Even in my company, very recently, we launched a framework to assess impact of a high potential leadership development program, and we've just rolled it out. So let's see if, you know, we are able to gauge impact at an individual level as well as at an organization and community level.
Happy Hours, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media. Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
So, Mark, we've spoken about definition, we've spoken about identification, we've also spoken about development. Let's talk about communication. Do you think it's a good idea to communicate to high potentials that they are a high potential? And why do you think organizations don't do that?
Yes, I have a personal preference that I think more transparency is normally better than less transparency. And so that means I do think that everyone in the organization, not just hypos, but everyone should know where they stand. So I think that's beneficial if we treat adults like they're adults so they can manage their own careers intelligently. Now, I think that what that means, though, is we need to have balanced conversations, especially with hypos. And that balanced conversation means we're not only telling them the good things that we're going to do for them, but we let them know that we do talent assessments every single year. So while we hope they'll be a hypo forever, people change, companies change. They have not been dipped in gold. This is our assessment of them this year. Let them know that sometimes we ask hypos to contribute even more. They're already busy. You might have more special projects or more interaction opportunities. So the workload probably only goes up for our hypos. And the story that I often tell to hypos is being a hypo in our organization is somewhat like the difference between being on the Broadway theater stage and the regional theater stage. On Broadway, the lights are hot and the critics are mean. And if anybody sees you trip on stage, they're all going to know about it and talk about it. So kind of let people know that the bright lights are on you. I think companies oftentimes don't tell because they're afraid either that someone will get a big ego. And I think you can adjust for that based on what I just said. They're afraid that if some people find out they're not a high potential, they'll get upset. Well, let's go back to that talent investment grid that you and I discussed. Let's tell everyone where they stand and what the benefits are of that. Or my favorite excuse that I hear from companies, they'll say, well, we're just not ready to be transparent. And I say, great, then let's pick the date by which you'll be ready. Let's say it is April 28th, 2022. That's when you'll be 100% transparent. We will work backwards from that date to make sure you're ready.
I loved your analogy, Mark. I will remember that, Broadway theater. And I agree, the transparency around who is high potential and who's not also is very, very critical for any high potential program. So with that, Mark, we will wrap up the first section, which is bottoms up, and we'll move to the more fun section, which is the rapid fire. Are you ready for the rapid fire, Mark?
Let's do it.
The rapid fire round.
So I'll ask you a question and you have to answer it real quick. The first one, Mark, three expectations of high potentials from the organization.
I think three expectations. The first one, humble. You stay humble, even though we've told you some great things about yourself. It's a key test of whether you can keep your ego in check the further you go up the ladder. Number two, sacrifice. Understand that if you're a hypo, you'll be doing even more for our organization. You're going to need to spend more time doing work things than non-work things. And three, we think you're great, so you need to be actively building and coaching others. There must be something we like a lot about you that we want more in other people. So we want you to be actively coaching and guiding other people so they can follow in your successful footsteps.
Great. And these traits are so underrated and understated, Mark. I'm really happy you're calling humility and sacrifice and building and coaching others. Next question, Mark. One thing talent management professionals should start, stop, and continue to do.
Start. I think we can all know business better. Know business in general, know our specific business. One of the things we do in a lot of our classes is we'll ask people basic facts about their company. What was your revenue last year? How much money did you make last quarter? And 90% of people won't know the answers to those basic questions. So what do we need to start doing? Knowing our business as well as the CFO knows our business. What do we need to stop doing? Well, I sometimes work with HR professionals who will blame the business or business leaders for not doing things that HR wants them to do. I look at the world from a consulting lens, which is no one hires me unless I convince them that I'm going to add value to their business. Well, we as talent leaders or HR leaders have the same responsibility. Business leaders don't have to do what we ask them to do. We should help them to understand the value in doing what we ask them to do. So don't blame people for not taking your advice. Maybe you're not offering it the right way. What should we continue doing? Become deep in your field. Just because we're in talent management doesn't mean that we can't always learn something new about the science or the practice and just become great at this function.
Mark, one way we can make managers more accountable for the high potential programs.
I think to our earlier conversation, a lot of this comes down to measuring. And one of the things I love to do is measuring the talent exporting of a leader. So if Nikita is a leader, I'm going to look over 3 years at her team members and see, are they growing faster than other people? Is she moving team members, good team members, out to other parts of the organization? So is she a net talent exporter, especially of her high potential talent? That is a great measure. It's a public measure, and it's one that we can compare leaders against leaders to see who's doing the best job in that area.
Mark, you are the talent management guru, and you know so much. What advice would you give to people like me who want to go deep into talent management? What should we do?
I have a not easy answer, but I think it's the right answer, which is learn the science behind our field. Most of the science behind our field is industrial organizational psychology, and you don't need to go off and get a PhD, but learn the basics of how people behave at work, what tends to drive people. I mentioned earlier things like we know that intelligence is a great predictor of potential. You know, understand the facts behind that, because if you understand that great fact base, then the opinions that you bring forth to others are going to feel much more solid, because then it's not, well, Mark thinks you should do X. No, Mark knows all the great science behind how people and organizations interact. And based on that science and based on your organization, here's what I recommend. So learn as much of the science about work, about how people and organizations interact to really help you consult from a position of strength.
Thanks, Mark. I'm going to take that advice. One high potential best practice you admire from any organization?
One of my favorites, I can't share the name of the organization, but one of my favorites is they assigned each hypo 3 mentees. So they had to mentor 3 people, and they evaluated that hypo on the mentees' evaluation of their ability to help them advance their careers. So it was additional data point they used to help determine if someone was really a high potential, because they only wanted senior leaders in their organization who were brilliant coaches and guides.
That's an interesting practice. Mark, I have read parts of your one-page talent management and really love it. Which is your favorite book, apart from your books?
Apart from my books, the book that got me into this field, old book, probably written before you were born, was called In Search of Excellence. And it was one of the first books that looked at what do we know successful companies do when they manage people. Now, the challenge with all of these books, whether it's Good to Great or In Search of Excellence, is over time, a lot of the companies in them fail. And so then people point at the book and say, no, that's wrong. Don't do that. That company failed. But the core truths about human behavior at work and what makes people successful are captured in books like that. So In Search of Excellence, I had just read that book before I went to business school. I had never worked for a big company before I went to business school. And so I got to business school and they said, well, what do you want to do? And I held up that book and said, the stuff that they do in here. And they said, that's HR work. And I said, what's HR? And that was kind of the start of my career.
Wow, that's interesting. What do you like doing, Mark, in your free time?
In my free time, well, I used to like going to restaurants. I'm hopefully going to get to start doing that again soon. But I do a lot of, I like the gym. And so I have a nice private gym I built here. So I spend a lot of time in the gym and then with my trainer on Muay Thai boxing. Because when you're an old guy like me, having somebody take swings at your head keeps your brain very, very sharp.
Do you like travel as well? Because I did read you mentioned that you have over 4 million airline miles. So do you love traveling?
I do. I really enjoy travel. And that's one of the things I've missed the absolute most over the past year is the inability to do that. In fact, I was talking with one of my friends this morning in India and trying to plan my trip over there, hopefully for November, assuming things get better quickly. So yes, I very much look forward to getting back on a plane. I truly enjoy seeing people in person.
Which is your favorite travel destination, Mark?
I think probably the same one that many people have. I love Paris. I think Paris is not only a beautiful city, but I love French food as well. So I try to get there. My wife and I try to get there as often as we possibly can.
Wow. You've achieved so much in your career, Mark. Anything in your bucket list or the wish list that's still pending?
You know, I am so fortunate. I had, you know, rather humble beginnings myself. And so I've already achieved far more than I ever thought I would in life. And so it's difficult for me to say, what else do I want to do? I think probably the out of work thing that I would like to do or after work thing is really just work harder to help animals to have good lives and work for animal charities. So that's probably the final thing on my list is to ensure that we're treating animals wonderfully and respectfully around the world.
Great. Mark, it's been such an enriching conversation with you. While I've always loved your webinars, your articles, your talks, I'm taking back so much from this podcast, and I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot too and have also got to know you better. You are an ocean of knowledge, and I don't think one podcast can ever do justice. So I definitely look forward to interacting with you again, Mark, on some other interesting talent management topic. But till then, you know, just want to thank you for this podcast and sharing your knowledge with us.
Nikita, it's been my pleasure. I appreciate the invitation and I look forward to seeing all of my friends in India as soon as possible.
Thank you, Mark.
Happy Hours, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media. Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.